So today, guys, I had the pleasure of meeting Stevie Lee. Yeah, he's he struggles with mental health. Mental health, which took him to places he didn't want to go. He ended up on a massive struggle with the way that he was feeling, and he ended up committing armed robbery, which led you to jail. Right, mate, how you doing?
Yeah, what a brilliant chance meeting that was
today. Yeah, it's really crazy. I was here doing a podcast with somebody else, and I stumbled across Stevie, and we just got talking, and his story just made sense to me, you know. He's in the middle of painting and decorating one of the studios where he's working from. And so, yeah, he's got paint all over him, and I've got him raw. So this is raw today, straight off the paintbrush, straight into the chair.
That's right, yeah.
Stevie, mate, tell me about the story.
Well, I mean, I don't pretend that my life or story is any darker or any harder than anyone else's. But just obviously, I can only tell my story. My mum was 16 when she had me. I won't really tell you too much about her stuff because that's her stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff happened at the time. My supposed dad, I only met him when I was 21, so I didn't even know who he was.
So you just grew up with just your mum and?
Yeah, just me and my mum. We had a little council place down south. You know, she was doing her best. Sometimes, you know, I remember we had to go to a cake tasting event. You know, like where you go and you can taste cakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to get some grub for the day.
Oh, good. So there was people throwing cake tasting events going on.
Yeah, like now they come up in town and say, do you want to come in? We've got all these cakes to taste and we'd go in there.
I'd be in my element. Yeah. But for you, that was different. That was you surviving. Right?
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
You never had food at home.
No, oh. Yeah. And, you know, I don't really want to say too much about my mum because, that you know, she's... That's her past and that, but
yeah, sure.
Yeah, for her it must have been really, you know, embarrassing there because we must have been like, you know. So, but you know, but at the same time, I was happy. Do you know what I mean?
Stuff your face full of cake.
Yeah, not just that, but I had my mum and also her boyfriend at the time. I actually called him dad, and his nephew is. We grew up together. We're the same age. And he's my best friend, and has been my best friend ever since. It's, you know, it was a struggle, and there was things that were not particularly very good. But she was a teenager doing her best, and actually, do you know what? She's a very intelligent woman, my mum, and instead of just sitting on benefits, she went out. And she got a job as a cashier, and she worked as doing a typewriting course in the evening to get promotion. So Sunday she was absolutely knackered. She worked 6 days a week and evenings. So you know, but as far as I'm concerned, I was happy. I was out all the time on the estate and with Liam, my best friend. And you know, it was for a time. It was all right.
So when you had this happy childhood despite all of the negative that was going on around you with but your mum done her best, it's brilliant. I'm glad to see that. So when did you start feeling like you may have had a problem mentally with the way that you think and you acted?
Yeah, well, I've thought about this a real lot actually, and I think. Because I think with mental health comes addiction, and with addiction comes mental health. And very rarely do you see one without the other. I think my mental health developed as things progressed, and
with addiction.
It's hard to say what was there first.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, someone that suffers with mental health as well, I think that you, I think it's always there, mental health is there. I think scenarios happen within your life that progress the mental health from creating to what could be a negative spiral of losing control of who you are, which leads you to do things that you don't want to do, i.e. take drugs, commit crimes, just be a negative person.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you can get on top and realise what you've got beforehand, there is ways of getting around, you know, mental health with, you know, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but there is tablets, there is therapy, there is things like that. Obviously, from what you told me earlier on, with the way that your story progressed, was there wasn't really much help for you at the beginning.
No.
And then you started, I'll let you carry on with your
story. Yeah, well, what I really noticed, as in what you're saying, it's probably always there, because I've got a personality disorder, and I'm emotionally unstable. So my emotions, it's like a set of scales, and they're quite hard to... it's quite hard to manage sometimes.
Yeah.
But one day, so basically one day, there's me, my mum, and my dad. It wasn't my dad, but he was my dad. Suddenly, it all went away. Like, I don't know, my mum was upset. And then the phone rings one day. I thought, all right, mum's happy again. So I thought, that must be dad. So I got on the phone, and there's a strange voice come down. It's like, hello, Stevie, I've heard all about you. And I didn't realise it then, but I realise it now, that to me, that was the devil that just introduced himself into our lives. And then, bam, everything changed.
So you classed that your mum's boyfriend at the time was the devil?
Yeah, the new one, yeah. We ended up packing up and moving to Exeter, then Bristol, but... home life was like, it was like walking on eggshells all the time. Things just changed dramatically, and it was just really uncomfortable. So I used to just come home from school, chuck my school bag in, and I'd be out all the time. You know what I mean? I was outside, lost the top of my finger.
Oh, do you know what? I never realised that.
People don't. But I was climbing up trees, but around the time...
How did you lose your finger?
Oh, I was collecting conkers back in the day when people used to play conkers about. And then the branch snapped, and as I fell down, ripped on by wire.
Oh my God.
I know. I should have come up with a better...
Mate, I sat there with sticks. I was happy for it. Sticks and conker trees.
Yeah.
No,
God. Not ginger. All that.
I would loved all that.
Yeah. And around the time of my GCSEs, that's when my mum... things, you know, she was, it's a bit hard to say really, but I saw my mum progressively go downhill, and she was higher manager by then in that West.
Yeah.
We had a Lotus Elise outside on the, going from having no electric to having a Lotus Elise on the driveway.
Yeah,
that's what my mum achieved.
And especially back then as well, them were some serious
cars. Yeah, this is when they first came out as well. We had a nice house, but I don't want to upset her by saying this, but I said to you before, I came home from school one day, because what he was doing was not so much physical abuse, it was mental abuse, and I think that's a lot worse.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like she wasn't my mum anymore. And me and my, it used to be me and my mum against the world.
Yeah.
Suddenly, and I come home from school once, there was loads of tablets all over the table, and I can say this because this is part of my story as well.
This is what I'm saying, it's your story, and I know that you don't want to say stuff about your mum and stuff, but it's not a negative way that you're saying it. You're just
hopefully
telling
not,
your life.
Hopefully
yeah,
not.
Definitely not, man. I mean, like when you've told me this before, it's you know, I didn't think any less of anyone from when you told me. It's just we've all got that journey, and it's tough. You know, and unfortunately, our mums, our dads, our uncles, our granddads—they're all embedded in our journey too. The path we've chosen now, you know, that's right. So it's not, you're not protecting, you're not hurting anybody, you're just telling your story, man.
Yeah, hopefully. So I remember picking her up, taking her up, like, why are you not at work, sort of thing. And she said to me, something I never forgot actually, and I shouldn't have done, but years later when I was on the booze, I rang her up, so I was full of resentment. You said this, and she told me she didn't remember at first, and then she eventually said, look, I was aimed at him, but she said, if it were, it's all your fault. If it wasn't for you, he'd love me. And I swallowed that, and wow. Then kept it to myself. Went to school the next day. There's all sorts of other events, you know. It was just not a very nice time. She tried to hang herself from the banister. And it got to a point where I've just done my GCSEs, and we just had to go back home, stay with my mum, my granny, because she was gonna end up dead. There was all, you know, I won't say his name, but there was stuff about, I don't know, whether he was doing child porn or whatever. It was just absolute mess of a...
Is this your mum's brother, devil?
Yeah, well, she married him, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, yeah.
So when she said that it was all your fault, because she'd not felt loved from him, because was it because he hated you and you were just in the way, or
like, I've got to look at it, because I've got my truth, he'll have his truth,
of course,
and then there's the actual truth,
of course.
This is how, and I was there, so this is what I believe. But to be fair, I didn't make it very. I made it quite awkward for him at first, because as far as I'm concerned, my dad was my dad.
Yes.
He told me that I wasn't allowed to call him dad anymore. He used to listen on the phone when I used to speak to him. But at the same time, I was the kid, he was the adult.
Yeah.
And
it's mad how a child can see that, but an adult can't.
Yeah, like, what's that about? Yeah, exactly, yeah. And there was one occasion where it was like, everyone at school used to talk about this programme that was on the night before, but it was on quite late, but I wanted to watch it. And so I put it on, and I was, not really, put it really quiet, and he shouted out, "Boy, get that, know what I mean, turn that TV off."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I'll turn it down a little bit more. There's no way I'll turn it off, I'll miss out on the conversation the next day.
Yeah.
And then I heard him come running upstairs, so I jumped up quickly and tried to kick the door shut so he wouldn't, and he, well, I was only a little, about 13 or something, so he kicked the door, I flew back. Didn't punch me in the face, punched me in the ribs. Wow. But bless her, my mum, she was either too scared. I shouted out, mum, and she just sat downstairs. But, you know, it was just,
How'd that make you feel?
Yeah, well, you know, that's why I was always out all the time. Just didn't mean that. It was just, it's a very hard period, which I never really spoke about until I actually later on went to rehab. And actually spoke about these times, because this is all a part of it. I think it was building up. I think my addiction started before I'd ever even done my first line of cocaine.
Yeah, I was going to say, what was your addiction?
My addiction was cocaine. I didn't really like drugs, but all this stuff built up for many years, and then suddenly, bang, like that. So I think I think I was addicted before. It was like a, I was on a pathway. Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It was just because I never liked smoking weed. I'd never done any other drugs, but as soon as I had that first line of cocaine, it was like a release.
Do you feel like that you was just looking for that way out of, like, accepting what your life had become, and you was just looking for that new path of, like, I need to feel something different other than this.
Probably. But also the catalyst at the time when I was 21, because so we moved back down south, and I actually met my real dad when I was like 19 or something. And I wish I hadn't. Honestly, like, he increased my mental health. Like, he told me, "You're not to call me dad." He didn't tell his family about me. He's got this massive house, like not like that. I was never after anything. He's got this massive house in the middle of the country. Never paid my mum one penny of child maintenance. He blamed my mum for everything, and I felt rejected, but I was looking for that. You know, do you know what? But he never done all that. I remember on my 21st birthday, I was working for a company in just outside Maidstone, and they're supposed to pick me up, take me out turned off his phone. I waited outside there for 3 hours. Even the security guard said, oh, I'll give you a lift to the train station. No, that's all right, I'll be in a minute. Then he'll be like, ring me up, and I'll be like, every time he ring me, I'll be anxious. And do you know what he made me feel like? He made me feel like I was 7 years old again. And I was always trying to impress him. And I don't know why. I didn't, it was just horrible. And then I had a sister called Jessica. I actually really miss her, actually. We were getting on really well. I only met her when she was 14. She must be about 25.
Not from your mum, from your dad.
Yeah, from his side, yeah. She didn't know about me, I didn't know about her. And then, but we used to go to the cinema, like, and she used to ring me in the middle of the night and say, oh, I'm really upset. I was like, whoa, what's happened? Well, I need to come down. She's like, oh, this boy, I like to kiss someone else. And I was like, not me,
yeah,
but
that's
her.
Yeah.
And then, so one night I asked to see him, and for my own mental wellness, I couldn't see him anymore. And he brought Jessica, and then the last thing I said, I can't see you, you know, I mean, he wasn't too bothered anyway. But the last thing I said to Jess was, what happens out between me and your dad, I'll always be your brother. But the last time I ever saw her, because he told her I wasn't even her brother. I had a DNA test done when I was little, and he doesn't even know who I am. And I do wonder about her sometimes. But in hindsight, my mum, this was fantastic, and this was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life, was the day that my sister Imogen was born. And I call her the angel in the dark. When things look so bleak, she's just wonderful. She's 19 now, she's at Bristol Uni. She was born when I was 17, little chubby little thing.
Mm.
And we've both got the same tattoo there.
Nice.
So
we're all bonded by ink.
Yeah, honestly. She may be my half-sister, but I don't think of her like that.
Yeah, same, man. Like, if you're blood, you're blood. There's no half, there's no nothing. If you're my brother, if you're my sister, we are brothers and sister. There's exactly. None of that. Like, I never understand why people say, this is my half-sister, this is my half-brother, this is my foster. Do you know what I mean? I have a foster brother, I have a foster sister as well. And, like, when people say it, I say, it's my brother. This
yeah,
is,
of course, yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Because you've got to sit there, and if it's like one gene that stops you from being full blood, like, you ain't never going to have that connection.
Yeah.
So I see you as my equal. So
yeah.
you are my friend, I am your friend, you know, so, and the same with brother and sister as well.
Yeah, so I know it gets confusing with the dad, but my dad originally, so that's my sister's dad. Me and my mum got back together. How amazing is that?
Yeah.
And in between, he had two boys, who I call my brothers, I mean, they call me. We're not even blood related, but, you know, to us we are.
Yeah.
So it's just fantastic. But, yeah, so around that time that happened with Gavin, I didn't deal with all the stuff with my mum's husband. And so one night I just went out with a geezer in the back of a car. I was 21, I think. And I wrapped up a line of coke. And then I've just done it, and I honestly, like, I didn't feel no pain anymore.
Did you have the drugs, or did your friend have the drugs?
Well, my friend had them, yeah.
Yeah.
And I never thought I would do Class A's. I mean, obviously, I smoked a bit of weed and fun. But from that day forward, I was, for 15 years, absolutely just on it. I'm absolute wreck. It made my mental health even worse. Then one night, because I was so full of resentment against my real dad, that went round his house at midnight with a knife, walked up the path, and he's got like horse stable doors where you can
open the top,
open
and then the box. Yeah.
So I went round there. I knocked on the door and I had the knife behind me. I was gonna kill him. I was gonna jab him and like that.
Because you're on the coke?
Yeah, that was an accelerant, but because I thought you after everything you'd done to my mum, took my sister, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then leaned out like that and he was like, oh, I want you around here. I was like, come on.
Did he know you had the knife on you?
No, he didn't, I had it behind my back at that point. Mm-hmm. And then and then he leaned out a little bit further. And I caught him, like, you know, the moonlight just lit up his neck like that. And I whipped the knife around and went to stab him in the neck. But as I did that, it all seemed in a bit of like slow motion. A light went upstairs and I caught a glimpse, and it was my sister. And she was looking out the window. And I thought, Jesus, I can't do that in front of that. I just said, yeah. And that's the last time I've ever seen him.
What was his reaction to you about to take a plunge at him?
Like that. Yeah.
Did he have any remorse for making you feel extreme where you was going to take your own dad's life?
He's got no remorse whatsoever. He's, well, you know, other people might have another opinion of him, but I don't. What kind of, you know, it's my mum's stuff, but what he done to her when she was pregnant, you know, it's just unforgivable. That's another catalyst for probably why I found cocaine. So, you know, just made me feel, none made me feel confident. I wasn't very confident about myself anyway.
I find drugs tend to do that to a lot of people, bring out their almost hidden self.
Yeah.
You know, I think drugs can make you have the confidence to be able to pull off the you that wouldn't exist without it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I've never been one to be a fighter or anything like that. You know, I've had my nose broken 9 times, so obviously not. But when you have a bit of Colombian Nautical, you think you're He-Man, don't you? So
you got yourself, you take the drugs,
yeah,
you go from being quiet even within yourself to...
Yeah, and it's not just the effect it has on you, it's the effect it has on everyone around you. You know, and around, so this is about 21, 22, and I think a couple of years before, my mum decided to move up north and take my sister. I did beg her to stay. You know, I remember crying one night, saying, please, like, don't, but she went.
Did you live at home at this point?
No, I was living in, it's quite close to her, but in a house share, I think. Mm-hmm. So when she left, and then all that stuff happened with Gavin, and I tried this magical powder that just makes you forget stuff, and you become like your alter ego who's completely different to you.
Massively, yeah.
Because we suffer a lot of anxiety, and that took that away. Don't worry about anxiety. Just have a bit of this. You won't feel anxiety till the next day, but then you'll have to have it again. And then it just progressed like that, and then for the next, I'd say 11 years, I was just absolutely at it, and just papering over the cracks of life, really. Got myself into some really dangerous and bad situations. It's going to be quite hard for me to say it. It's what we spoke about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
At the time when it happened, I didn't realise the implications. I think I was about 25. And I can only say this out loud now because I kept it to myself and never spoke of it, never said it out loud until last year when I was in rehab. And I decided to give it my all. And when you have to read out your life story, and we all sat around the campfire, and I said my life story and included this in it. One night I was at a pub, and, as you do on it, and I was with this girl and went back to her house. This other guy from the pub who I didn't really know came back as well. And then...
You went back to your place?
No, I went back to this girl's house, to carry on the sex or whatever. And then he must have put something in my drink, blood, because I was in bed with this girl kissing her, and then woke up in the morning, I'm in bed with this kid. I passed out, completely blacked out, and I don't ever do, because I don't really drink, Well, you know, I do, but I'm always on the, so I'm alert. I woke up in the morning, the way he looked at me, and then I felt this pain, and just knew straight away that, like, you know, obviously I've been raped.
Did you feel like that the girl and the boy was involved in like joint enterprise to get you back to hers, get you spiked and everything? Because if you've gone back to her house and you're doing something with her and then you pass out, like what's she doing whilst this guy is like raping you unconscious?
I don't think she was aware, to be honest. I honestly don't, because I still know her, and no, I don't think. Yeah, I can't tell you what happened after that.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't have been there. I can guarantee that. I sent him a message on Facebook a few years ago. Because I used to drink off it and sniff off it.
You've, throughout the pain in your life, you've created and found a way out, and your way out was cocaine and drink. Well, minus drink, because you didn't drink a lot, but your way out to hide from the reality of the pain that you feel on a day-to-day basis is drugs, class A drugs, coke, and that got you into some scrapes. Unfortunately, this time you had no control. I mean, like I said to you earlier on when you told me this, and I've got nothing but respect that you told me that. You know, being able to tell a complete stranger like myself, I only met you today, and I think you're an amazing guy, you know.
Thank you.
For you to come out and tell me that, I felt honoured for you to be able to confide in me that way. You know, and I feel like, you know, you have no reason to be ashamed, and you have no reason to hide anymore, because you're strong enough to be able to come out and tell me, a total stranger, which I feel like I'm fairly connected to you now. I'd definitely like to stay in contact with you after this. And of course, on my show, you know, that you're out there to let people know that this shit happens. This shit is happening. And being men, we're told to believe that we must mask the way that we feel, and we shouldn't say it out loud. But do you know what it is? Like, I'm here to let men know that mental health is real in men, just as much as it is women. And we are not weak if we speak out, you know. And today, you are opening the door for so many more men.
Hopefully. I
guarantee it, mate. I promise you. Like, I guarantee that you are opening the door for mental health for men today. To being able to come out and do this, you are not only helping yourself, you're helping me help others, you know, and believe me, it's massive. Massive.
Mental health is not a myth.
Oh, mate, I've been banging my head against a wall for years trying to tell people that it's okay for men to cry. It's okay for men to talk about their feelings, you know. This is why men die so many years before women, because we just let it all be, and we inhale all of the bullshit, and we don't let it out because we're men.
Yeah.
We have to be strong. We have to be the backbone of the family. We have to be, you know, something that we just want to just be able to scream out loud and just say, do you know what? I'm going to cry. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
100%.
So, mate, it's powerful. It's powerful. So you sent this guy a text message.
Yes. Years later. I was looking for an apology or something, I don't know. Just sent him a message saying, I know what you've done. And he sent me back a smiley emoji.
Wow.
Yeah.
So from that, do you think he's done this more than once then, to be able to be that brazen about it?
I would like to think, I would say so, yeah. But, and that's it. Thing is, I should, I, if he is, I should happened last year when I said it out loud had a positive impact and a negative impact on me. Positive impact is I can say it out loud now, and I can tell you, and I can tell my mum and say it here. The negative impact is now it is out there, I can't take it back.
You don't have to take it back. It's not your, you shouldn't have to struggle with this alone. You understand? Like, you need, struggling with it alone has led you to take more drugs.
Yeah.
It's led you to be in jail.
Yeah.
It's led you to, why is that guy holding that power over you? Because you're afraid to say out loud in case what people think.
I know.
This guy, because people aren't talking, is getting away with this.
That is
he's ruining lives. Luckily, you're strong enough to stay alive. That's, you know, right. Because there's people that would that would literally kill themselves because that's happened to them. And you're here to fight that. And you're living proof that you can still maintain yourself. But don't take it, man. Don't take it back, man.
Well, I haven't had the best relationship with the old Bill either. And I'm just worried that if I do go to them.
Mate, you're a victim. Whether you've been bad or not, you're a victim.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrendous that this bloke has done this to you and that you feel like that because of you've got a criminal background and mental health problems, that you're not going to be heard. And that's really sad to think that you're at a position where you can't get help because you feel like, because you've been bad, that there's no one there to help you. But people are there to listen, man. There is people out there that will take this serious.
And it is you're right, it's my responsibility. If he's still out there, I could prevent that from happening from someone else.
It's now your responsibility.
I know what his name is. Yeah, I'm not going to say his name, obviously.
Sorry, up to you.
Do you know what the weird thing is? Like, the next day, I had a dream about him out loud as well. And then I couldn't sleep for it. But the next day, I just got up. It was a Saturday. Cleaned myself up. Left and went and played football. And I was using Banter Man at football. They used to call me Banter. I was probably a bit quiet that day. But then I just carried on. And I didn't realise I locked it away so much, so far in my subconscious. I almost forgot it happened. But I didn't, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. To me, I did, but I didn't. And then the day the first time I ever said it out loud, around that campfire in front of all them people, and good people, by the way, I burst out in tears. And it came from nowhere. And then I realised it. It was affecting me in a massive, massive way.
Mm-hmm. I can totally imagine. Like, without a doubt, the trauma that you've had to go through mentally because of what this guy decided was okay to do.
Yeah.
It's not okay. And people out there need to know that there is people, victims like yourself, that you are now the voice of saving the next person that this person has done it to.
That's my responsibility now. I really do think so.
Think about the next person.
Yeah.
Because you can't take that back now.
No, I
don't. But you can stop it.
Yeah, I can.
You know? The reason why people keep redoing this to people is because the fear of speaking out loud allows them to move in the silence of their black life.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as in the colour of the skin.
No,
I mean, these people operate in the darkest corners of your imagination. Yeah. All the little whispers, the telltales, these thrive off of it. It's a bit like a horror movie, you know, because they can smell your fear. They know that they're picking their victims. They're choosing people that they know like you're prey, and you're not. You're a human being that's now been subjected to a lifetime of pain, and you're coming through that now. And coming through that, you've got strength now to be able to speak about it to strangers, to the world.
Yeah.
And now you see it's your responsibility.
Yeah, I was a bit apprehensive about doing this, but if it helps one person out there,
I stand by that 100%. I mean, the one thing that I related to you on when we started speaking, when I met you, I thought to myself, oh, you're a decent geezer, right? I like you. I like the way that you was friendly, you come across. You've got pure presence of just positivity. And considering that you've got, like, somewhat of a negative background, and your mind goes from negative to positive because of the illness that you have.
Yeah.
I felt like I connected with you because some of the feelings that you have, I've had. Yeah. And no matter who I speak to, I'll speak to my missus, and she'll really like, yeah, I understand. And as much as I love her, and she's never felt that, so I understand that she's never going to feel exactly how I feel. My best friend, you know, like I can say it to him a million times because he hasn't felt it, he will never know. But when I was talking to you and you was talking to me, I felt like I was talking to you through you talking. I really believe I know exactly how you feel, because some of the things that's the matter with you is wrong with me.
Yeah. And it's so good speaking to you today, because like we said earlier, if I can't understand what's going on in here myself, then how can I relay it to a professional who can actually give me a proper assessment and then say what's wrong? But with you, I related to what you were saying, and then I can sort of visualise what's wrong with me then.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Do you want me to say what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing's the matter with you. You and me are cut from the same cloth, as well as Jamie and all your viewers out here. There is nothing the matter with you, like there's nothing the matter with you. We're just on a different frequency.
Yeah.
And I think what's the matter with you and what's the matter with me is people can't relate to the way that we think, because they follow the norm.
Yeah,
the way that it is, the regimental way from school, from parenting, it's all just the same. But where we don't follow that same pattern of life, we kind of like flow in and out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So because we flow in and out of it, I don't feel like there's anything the matter with us.
No.
I just think it's others not understanding the way that we flow, because it's not the same as the others. So with that, we're isolated to being mental, to being, you know, autistic, being ADHD, being all of the above, bipolar, like we get put into categories because we don't think the same. But me and you sitting in a room, you're no different than me, I'm no different. We think on the same path. So if we were surrounded by us, are we different?
No.
So who is the people that stand on the outside pointing their fingers?
Well, that's why I was telling you about this book that I wrote, like sort of semi-autobiography, and the title is Define Average with a question mark.
Powerful.
Because, like I said, you can define someone as being average looks, average height, but no one on this entire planet is average. We're all completely unique in our own different ways. And even long before we're gone, and there's new generations, hundreds of years, there's no one else that will enter this planet that will be like exactly like you.
Yeah.
It's a mad thought, that.
But that's because of our experience of created who we are. Our damage, our pain is created who we are. And do you know what it is? It's really thing, because I am exactly what you see. Yeah. You look at me and people have this mad view of the way that I am, nutter, psycho, gang, whatever, you know. I am all of everything that you're saying. Yeah, I am everything that you're saying. But you have to bring that out of me.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
And you can go to a vicar and you can say to him, you are what you are, but you'd have to bring, like, that is a vicar, a man of the cloth, blah, blah, blah. But I'm sure if someone was there and he walked in and someone was, you know, I don't really want to say it, but I will, like, it's like raping his child or something like that, you're going to see that vicar turn into the worst man that there is or is possible, because he's going to turn into the animal he was once, his ancestors once was.
Yeah.
You know? So that's why the environment that we put ourselves in is very important for the way that we see and act ourselves. Yeah. You understand?
Yeah.
Everyone is capable of killing someone, hurting someone, emotionally fucking someone up, like rape, all of the above. Everyone is capable of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're also capable of the positivity.
Yeah.
You're also capable of just setting yourself on a path where you believe that you deserve that route of happiness.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
right.
We are what we produce ourselves, you know, so it's like that. So after you'd sent this message to the guy and he'd sent back this emoji, like, where was you at in your head with this?
Madly into, like, using cocaine every day, drinking. That took me up to when I was 32. And, no, 31. 2016... Christmas time, went to the doctors, my mental health was all over the place, and I was just covering it up with cocaine, and it was just an absolute mess. I went to the GP, I don't know what's going on, but I don't feel right. I was working as a roofer at the time, and he went, oh yeah, go and see this lady down Community Mental Health Centre. Saw her, she put me on the scales for some reason, and then put me in Pembrey Hospital for 5 days. Even the nurses didn't know why I was there. It was just...
So you was there for mental health and she weighed you and put you in hospital?
Yeah, put me in hospital. And then...
Was you like malnourished? Was you underweight?
No. I don't know what...
It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. And then the nurses was like, I don't know why you're in. I was like, I don't know either. No one came around to see me. I was just on the bed for 5 days and then they said, right, you've been discharged. This is the thing, like...
That must have been so confusing for
you. Yeah. This is the thing, I've been up, it wasn't till I went to prison that I had to go to prison to see a psychiatrist. That was the reality of it. My auntie had severely mental health issues, and what she went through to see a psychiatrist, I understand the mental health services are stretched and they're going to be even worse now after COVID, but there's people crying out, like, you know, like the hidden homeless. There's hidden mental health people out there. And it's...
They say not all disabilities are visible.
No, that's right.
And I do think mental health is a full-on disability.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, because, you know, as much as we try and follow the norm, we aren't set in that bracket. And that takes me back to what I just said a minute ago, you know. We are very different and we have to manage the way that we are to fit into society in a very different way to waking up at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning for work, going to work, coming home, you know, having your lunch break like you would do at school, so your regime,
you know, that's right.
Do have to manage it different.
Yeah.
Now, you say that you went to jail and it was the mental health of it. Is this from the armed robbery that you was...
Yeah, that's it. Yes. So after I come out of Pembrey Hospital, spent another, from sort of December to March, just existed like a living ghost, basically. And then one day, because I had a work truck at the time, I woke up to work as normal, sat down, like, in silence. And then my girlfriend at the time rang me, as she usually does, for she goes to the hairdressers. I had a normal conversation with her. And then I said, anyway, baby, I better go because I'm at work now. Went out to the truck, put a duct tape round to a hose pipe, put it through the window, and turned the radio on, turned the ignition on, and after a while I started to feel really warm and tingly. And I've only ever cried when I've been sad. There's only one time in my life where I've cried when I'm so happy, and that was a day that I was inches away from dying. I felt so I remember I was just about to pass out, and I felt like absolute peace. I thought about my sister, and I know it's a selfish thing to do, but I felt like I was causing my family so much grief that they'll be upset in the short term, but the long term will really benefit them. And then, honestly, I felt tears in my eyes. I was so happy that it was still going to be over. My mind was just like a washing machine. I couldn't control it and didn't know what to do. I'd gone to the doctor, and then I got arrested by the police came, smashed the window. Anyway, put me in a mental health unit for the night, in an empty room with a chair. This is the British Mental Health Service.
It's funny you should say that when they stuck you in a room, an empty room with a chair.
Yeah.
I remember going to the local, it's local to us, it was the mental institution where I ended up. And they put me in the room. This room was probably double the size of the room we're in now. And it had bookshelves and everything on there, but there was no books.
Yeah.
There was nothing. It was like furnished out to be a home. And this room was empty. And that fucked my head.
Yeah.
I went in there and I thought, they're putting me away. Like, they're going to come in, straitjacket me, jab me in the arse with an injection and knock me out. And I'm done. This is me. I'm not coming out of this room. And I kept looking at the door, because every time I heard something at the door, I kept looking at the door, and I remember, and they go, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, why?" and I kept looking, they go, "You keep looking at the door. Can you tell me why that is?" And I was like, "Well, am I not allowed to look at the door?"
Yeah.
And they said, "It's the way you're looking at the door." And I'm thinking, hey, they're trying to find something, they're trying to put it on. So now I'm thinking, like, am I weird? Like, am I weird? And I think, maybe I was overlooking the door a few times, only because I'm waiting for them to come through the door.
Yeah, yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
Like, I'm waiting for them to rush me and just take me off to a mental institution. And they didn't. You know, it was really, really freaky. So yeah. I definitely get what you mean about that empty room.
It was just...
They do it because they have the empty room because they don't want... If you end up losing it,
there's
nothing in there that you can hurt them with. But I get that now.
But they leave you in there for hours and don't tell you why, what's going on. So that does you nothing.
Yeah.
I was just sitting there on this chair, and then loads of doctors came round at about 3 a.m. with notepads. I said, "Look, I'm fine. I just need to get back to work tomorrow. I'm going to lose my job." And then they just got me a taxi home, and then I'm back at home again.
Really?
Yeah. So now I'm doing the same thing. I'm existing again, just going to work. And then I had one particular... I've done a bit of work for this geezer, and on the EastEnders set, actually. And he knocked me for a bit of money, so I nicked his car. And he started ringing my mum. Well, who rings his mum? My mum was like, "Stephen, stolen someone's car." "No, I don't know what you're talking about, mum." But anyway, so on the last day of this...
What car was it?
Oh, some shitty Mazda thing.
Oh, was it?
It wasn't really worth it anyway. But, and then on the Sunday, I was curtain twitching. I had really bad psychosis then. Like, he's coming round. I was hiding in something, the next door neighbour's garden, like a gnome, with an iron bar, waiting for him to come. And he never turned up. I was hiding under a van. I looked like an absolute nothing. And then I was carrying a knife with me, because I thought if he comes in. Like, and then, Sunday, the 17th of July, this was on. No, 2nd of July, this was. 2017, I remember that. What was it? I don't know, anyway. It was July 2017. And I said to myself, "You go up shot and I'll wait here for him to come round." So half of me went up the shot and half of me stayed at home.
So you're on your own, you've said to yourself, you stay here and I'll shoot to the shop.
Yeah, get some beers. Because you've got work tomorrow, you need to. get some beers.
So now you're thinking like two people, and you're talking and answering yourself.
Yeah, my flatmate at the time was like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh no, I'm going to the shop, but he's down here, don't worry, he's all right. Like, honestly, fucking...
Mate, I'm laughing because I know this feeling. It's so strange, man, because, like, I know how this feels.
Yeah.
I know how this feels. And I laugh because... Yeah, and I'm laughing because it's strange hearing it from somebody else. You understand? Because no one else has... I've never really heard anyone say anything like that.
Yeah.
So when I hear it, it's like... There's more people out there.
Yeah.
Like X-Men.
Well, I had another psychosis experience before where I was convinced that the BBC News were on the way around. I noticed this. Because they've been following me and watching me through my phone for months, and they made a documentary. So I threw my phone out the window, ran around my mate's house, kicked his door in, and he was like, what's going on? I said, turn on the news, I'm on the news. This is 6 o'clock in the morning. Like, yeah, this was happening a lot, and I wasn't well. So anyway, half of me that's gone up the shop, so I've gone up local off license, it's about 8 o'clock, everyone's sort of milling about, it's summer, so I've gone in there, and the beers were stacked up like that, so they're quite, you had to get your finger in there, and I knocked them all over, and the person in the shop was like, not me having a go at me. So I stepped back, and I remember, like, it was like I was watching myself in the third person. So I'm over here watching myself do this. And I'm really sorry to, you know, it doesn't justify what I'd done. And I did make my apologies when I went to court. And that was part of my mitigation and part of the reason why my sentence was reduced. Because I, hopefully you can tell, I'm not exactly a typical armed robber. I'm not a nasty person. I have a lot of empathy.
Yeah.
But I just wasn't. So they're having a go at me. The manager's come out the back and said, because apparently I'd done it in the shop earlier, but I don't remember being in there. I felt in my pocket I had the knife. I just turned around, made sure there's no one in the shop. I went, right, put the fucking money from the till in the bag. You fuck off out the back. And then, so I've walked out. And just sipping a can on the way home, like, just walking down the road. I've just done an armed robbery, like, just that absolute... And then, so when I got home, I rang up my brother and said, throw the cash on him. And then, I don't know, honestly, I don't know what's going on. But I do remember being stood outside in a pair of shorts, and Armed Old Bill just came from everywhere, got me on the floor, and I was like, oh, isn't it? What are you here for? Like, you know what I mean? It was absolute. And I've had a few convictions for possession of cocaine and all that, but nothing really, you know. The next thing you know, I'm in a police cell facing an armed robbery conviction.
So you'd seen money on the side, you didn't know where it's come from, so you, like, called your brother up to find out where.
Like, something's going on there. And he was like, you better just get on the train and go to your mum's. And I was like, no, that'd be right. And just went out and tried to enjoy the sun in the garden.
How much money was it?
Only about 200 quid. I think, something like that. I mean, I think I even paid for the beers.
Give me all the money. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I think I said, and here's a fiver for the beers. I mean, how mad is that?
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show what kind of mess that you is in. And this is all stuff that's related to your past and, you know, things that have happened to you. You've got yourself in such a drug addiction that you have tried to push everything into one room and close the door.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, that's
and,
it.
And I think your room was full.
It was bursting at the seams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just exploded.
I think that's what's happened, mate. I think you know, you exploding like that and not realising it is obviously going to show that you've closed your door on yourself totally, and you've let the demons take over.
Yeah.
What happened after you've been arrested? What happened? Did the police obviously have come and got you?
Yeah.
Got interviewed. They took you away. Interviewed you.
Got remanded. Got sent to Elmley prison. Wouldn't even let me put a pair of shoes on. So I've ended up.
So because they thought you was a risk, so they
no,
from the house because you were just in the show. Yeah, I'll move up.
Yeah. So when I said, can I go and put my shoes on? No. So I've gone to prison in a pair of shorts. And they give me like the biggest jumper that a clown would even wear. They, I'm sure they went and found the biggest one they could find. So it was hanging off me like that. And then got put straight into Elmley. And then that was, you know, a bit of a shock at first, but I said to myself, listen, you've got to front it out now, you know what I mean? Because, you know, and I'll tell you what, if you put a bunch of monkeys on the wing, it would have been quieter. If the noise that, and, you know, none of the screws would tell me what to do, you know, it's just...
Well, like wild monkeys. I went to one monkey sanctuary in Edinburgh. I was up in Scotland. I lived up there for a little bit, and I was there, and the noise was just horrendous.
Yeah, that's what it, and it was so intense. And then like, and I was just walking around for like the first couple of days. No one really bothered me because I thought he hadn't even got his shoes on. What's the point in robbing him?
Yeah, yeah.
But do you know what? I've got to have a big up to the Forward Trust organisation that works in prisons and is the reason why I'm in Hull, because they came and put me on some courses. And actually, I done all right. I kept myself to myself, stood up for myself when I needed to. I mean, you don't want to hear all these prison stories. Everyone's got loads of them. But, you know, I've got a job in the library. I cracked on. And I took my sentence, which started off at 5 years, 6 months.
Was you clean in jail?
Yeah.
I was doing your sentence started... Sorry, man, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, sorry.
Your sentence started at five years.
5 years, 6 months.
6 months. Did you have to do that sentence?
I was looking at an 8, but I got 5 years, 6 months. Reduced, third off, guilty plea, mental health and mitigation. Because I wrote the victim's letters. Honestly, I felt absolutely awful about it. You know, I mean, I've threatened someone with a knife. That is just not on it.
I do so much now for knife crime.
Yeah, so you do.
And like, you know, before I'd lost my brother to knife crime, I was a... liability, mate. I've been in the dock several times for knife crime offences. I was known for using and carrying knives,
yeah,
axes, you know, allegedly guns, hammers were another favourite of mine, and axes, you know, and this is all stuff that I'd used over my time. And do you know what it is? I don't even know why, because I'm capable of being able to have a scrap.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I always had that backup just in case, you know. And I sit there and I think about it now, like, why? So when you say, like, you know, I said sorry because I truly mean it. In some of my videos that I've done before, I have apologised to the people, everyone that I have, you know, I've sent out a one sorry to everybody, you know, because I am sorry for what I've done. But, you know, if I felt like you deserved it at the time, you deserved it, of course, you know. But it doesn't mean that just because I hurt you or I tried to get you, that my sorry doesn't count, you know? I am sorry, but if you made me do it, it's your fault, you know?
Yeah.
But I am sorry for doing it.
Yeah, so, that's fair enough.
Yeah, the victim statement, I get it, man. A lot of people that do write them genuinely mean it, and I believe you do mean it.
Well, what I quickly learned about prison is there's not a lot of empathy for their victims and people in prison. And I learned that pretty quickly, that if it's got nothing to do with me, I'm getting involved. If someone's getting slashed in a cell and it's got nothing to do with me, that's got nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
But I came out of there. I mean, it's been a rough ride since, but Forward Trust got me into rehab in Hull. That's why I'm in Hull now. I've done my rehab. I've got a flat. I'm trying to earn an honest crust.
So Forward Trust seems to be really positive thing. They're the ones that helped Barry as well.
That's where I met Barry.
So Barry was Barry O'Shea was the guy that owns CrossFit Academy. You'd met him there. This is how I'd met you. So we've got a mutual friend. Yeah. And it's just mad how the universe works, isn't it? How it put us together. So yeah, I mean, look at the way, like what they've done for Barry now. He's an entrepreneur taking over the world now, and it's you've become part of the journey as well, man.
That's right. And I've got some really good people in the city. I mean, I miss my brother, I miss my sister, mum, and my best friend Liam, but. Honestly, there's nowhere else in the entire world where I've got people, like-minded people. Because we spoke earlier about distance yourself from negative people. I don't associate with negative people anymore because I'm negative enough to
big
myself anyway.
Yeah.
I don't need someone else's because I'm already trying to cope with mine.
Yeah, I think like managing our negative behaviour with the condition that we have is just manageable.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, but as soon as someone just presses, like someone coming and putting a one of these weights on top of your personality, all of a sudden you're carrying this new negativity that you're only just getting used to your own negative feeling to be able to then take on somebody else that's going to magnify your problems by immense amounts.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's good. You're cutting out the negativity. The negative people, you're creating strength, you're painting, decorating now.
Well,
as you can see,
you've got
But you're doing good, the place is looking amazing.
And what I'm trying to do, like, with my girlfriend as well, is when I make decisions, because I'm very impulsive, and I'll just do stuff without thinking the consequences for someone else or me, so I'm trying to consider, if my decision here, how will it affect her and our relationship? Because obviously, relationships over the years, I've self-destructed them, but this time I'm trying to do things differently.
Yeah, well, that just goes to show that the program that you're working with is truly helping you. For you to be able to not be selfish and just think about yourself and to think of others is already you're a great advocate to. The trust, being able for them to be able to help you manage yourself in that way, because you've spent years of abusing yourself via drugs, abusing yourself and beating yourself up because somebody felt like they could do things to you that is not a thing. And these people have come in and they've just opened the curtain in your dark room and allowing you to be able to feel the sun now, you know?
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I think, you know, hats off to them. I'd definitely love to look into them a little bit more and just see the work that they're doing and just spread their love, you know, because I think there's more people that need them.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't have to go to jail just to be able to be able to be on the mend. It's a shame that you had to go down that journey and that the doctors and the system actually let you down here on the outside world, and that you'd had to have wasted time that you're never going to get back again just to be able to get help. That's really sad.
I know. That's the case for a lot of people, unfortunately.
Yeah. But the good thing is you found them now. Your journey is changing.
Yeah.
You're building strength. And I think that from this, I think you are definitely going to be, you know, talking to some people about getting things.
Yeah, hopefully,
put forward to stop anyone else from feeling the same way.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
So, you know, I'll back you 100% of the way. Me and Jamie, we're a team. We work together with you. And,
brilliant.
And definitely stay in contact with you for sure. And I'm glad that you're on the right path now, and you're managing your mental health a little bit better.
It's getting manageable. I'm not, I'm not fixed by a long stretch, but
Of course, man. Of course, there's definitely a journey for you.
Yeah, brilliant.
Where do you see yourself now?
What,
as a person?
I'm a good person that deserves better.
I see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that you are a good person, and the better that you're looking for, that's in you.
Yeah.
You know, that is definitely in you, and for you to be able to feel like you're worthy of that better, you have to believe that you are worth it.
That's probably the biggest obstacle at the moment, is thinking, am I worth it? But I'm getting it.
100%. Listen, mate, like, you deserve, like, you're putting good into the world. You deserve it.
Yeah.
You understand? You're not creating negativity. You're not putting out, like, a vibe where you want to hurt people. You want people to suffer. You're doing good things to your life and people around you. You deserve it. And believe that your worth is a lot more than what you see and feel.
Yeah.
You know, I've gained happiness from meeting you.
Oh, brilliant. So have I, actually.
And brilliant. I've gained strength from meeting you. Good. So know that if you can do that to me, and I'm a strong person, then believe in yourself, because you are worth more than what you think you deserve.
Thank you. It's nice to hear.
No, I truly mean it. There's not many people I come across in life where I think to myself, do you know what? I could stay friends with you.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, I like you.
Thanks, man.
And I think, you know, you should believe in yourself, because, you know, if you can make me believe in you, and I've only known you for a few hours.
That's right. Yeah.
Then you should definitely believe in yourself.
Yeah.
100%. So tomorrow, you wake up in the morning. Come and look at yourself. come and finish off the job that But you should wake up every time you look in the mirror. Look at yourself.
Yeah.
You know, look at yourself. Don't look past yourself. Don't look into your past. Look at you. Look at your future, and just grab it with both hands, because now it's your time. You deserve it, and it's all you now. Yeah. You're at that level now where all your help is giving you tools. Now it's time for you to build what you want to build with it.
Yeah.
You know, like I said with you, with believing in yourself and chasing your dream, you don't want to be standing here while your dream gets further and further away.
I've been thinking about that ever since you said that. Really does make sense.
Yeah, you have to power up, man. And like, you can go at it for like months and months and months, and you might stop for a week. Yeah, you deserve that break. In life, you go on a holiday a year, right? That's you having a break from life.
Yeah.
So what's to say that you'll break from your goal right there and then for a week? Not where you can lose it, sniff it up, and just go fucking mental. Yeah. I mean, have that break, relax, just chill out, and just be like, this is my holiday. I'm allowed this holiday for a minute. And then, bang, don't leave it too long. Jump straight back into it after a couple of days, a week. Get back into it, and then get back into it harder, faster. And then get that dream, because you deserve it. Do you know why you deserve it? Because you're going out of your way, and you're making it happen. Where if you're just sitting there expecting it to come to you, it's never going to.
That's true.
It's never going to. You know, you could be wasting the only thing that you have power over, and that's time.
Yeah.
You know, you have time. It's your time. We're very limited on that. Especially because we've wasted so much time already getting to where we're at today.
Yeah.
It's gone. We ain't never getting that back.
No, no.
So what time we got left? Make your legacy happen.
Yeah.
Because when you're gone, and we're all going to go, when we're gone, how are we going to be remembered? Who's going to remember? what's going to happen from our death. I'm not dying in. I'm not dying for no reason. I'm dying. I'm leaving a legacy behind for my children to understand what I was trying to do. You know, and that's my goal. That's my dream.
Brilliant.
You know, so. And if I can help people along the way, I will. And if I meet good people,
I
really enjoy you here. Like you saying that has really empowered me.
So,
honestly, man, and I know I'm mumbling on a little, but I get you get it.
Yeah.
And mate, I've got nothing but respect and admiration that you'd come on today and talk to everyone that's listening to this podcast about mental health. And not just like, I feel sad today, we're talking real mental health, you know, real problems, you know, you've been dealing with yourself and three different people, like you stay here, I go to the shop, and then I'm watching myself rob this person, I don't even know how the £200, this stuff's real.
I know.
This stuff's real, and unfortunately, you know, there are some people hurt, you're in jail, you've lost your way, but you're on the right path, and I'm really pleased I got to meet you today.
Oh, yeah, it's been
amazing. Yeah, it's been absolutely amazing. Are you on social media and that?
Yeah, on Facebook. I don't really use Insta or...
Oh, Insta's the best, man.
Yeah.
That's my go-to. Instagram is my go-to. That's my thing. I don't understand Facebook. I don't really get it.
I don't understand Insta. Yeah. I let my sister use Insta as well.
Well, Insta's the way forward, man, because there's a lot less negativity on Insta. That's where I'm at. Like Facebook, there's a mass variety of negativity on there and stuff I just don't want to waste my time with, you know. I appreciate the time I've got, and if I am using a platform to be able to socialise or anything or show my life to anyone, Instagram is the way forward.
Okay.
Give it a look. It might be a bit of you, you know. And we'll stay in contact with that. And it's good. So Facebook, what's your Facebook? Took you under the bus now, innit?
Yeah, I know. Stevie Lee.
Stevie Lee.
Yeah.
I'll give you the details. I'll add it to the video and stuff. But what do you say to any of the guys out there that are struggling with mental health? What would you say to them?
Do you know what? Everyone wants to constantly move forward and take steps forward, but sometimes all you can do is stand still. But standing still is alright because it's not going backwards. And sometimes, some days I'm just standing still, but as long as I'm not going backwards, then I'm happy with that. And I just really hope that, like, you know, and I'm really going to consider going to the police because I think it's really important. And if, you know, if just one person relates to just even one word that I've said, then this has all been worthwhile, because I was a bit nervous and a bit apprehensive, but, you know.
Yeah. You was, and I'm really glad that you've gained strength from that. So that's with your mental health and that lot, and any man that's been like abused, whether it's mentally or physically, I would recommend going to speak to someone about it. Do not lock it away.
No.
Do not let these people get away with it. Do not close the door on it, because you will suffer. Like, you will suffer within yourself.
I suffered for too long, and look where it got me. It sent me to the shovel. Just abuse of cocaine. I nearly lost my entire family. You know, all because I couldn't. You know. Yeah.
You've done well today, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
You've done really well. Thanks for opening up to us.
Yeah, thank you.
I really appreciate it. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, it's fine. Yeah, thanks.
Mate, respect. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
You're a good guy, and we're definitely going to stay in contact.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.